So we are now reached a juncture where we need to also understand the strategies that need to be enforced for hiring senior management, that is the executive cadre or level of management. And we are discussing this as a part of the 10th chapter in this particular subject. Here we look at a concept which was already discussed, the retained executive search. We'll also be designing a 4-point strategy, and we will be also looking at the executive fit or the right fitment of the executive with the organization. So as is customary, we will first discuss the introductory part. So executive hiring basically refers to the process of discovering and employing candidates to occupy leading roles at organization. Now, when we talk about the leading roles, these are the leadership or the top layer, which are involved with designing a strategy, also known as the C-suite or the C-level, which might include the CEO, the CFO, the CTO, the COO, the director, the managing director, and so on. So these are the topmost layers, okay? To hire the most qualified executives for the top level positions, an organization needs to graduate from simple hiring and leverage more advanced techniques. Of course, as you know, these are people who hold a very heavy weight, correct, on their shoulders. They come with a great sense of responsibility. A person possessing an average experience in recruitment may not be sufficient to, you know, ask, interview or recruit such heavyweights in the organization. So there may be more advanced people or techniques required. Good executive employees are scarce and highly sought after. As you know, as the organization, you know, as the levels go up, there are very few people at the top, with the bottommost layer being the most basic. So the top end tends to taper off like that of a pyramid. Hence, there's a scarcity and not an abundance, since their decisions will make or break the business. So just imagine if a CEO has to be hired for a prominent organization, the earlier one has either retired or has moved out. So the new CEO, either, you know, if they have to be hired from outside, they will actually make or break the business. So recruiters would not take any chance. They would want to hire the best. Over here, the remuneration will certainly not be a limiting factor. But we need to be mindful that recruiting executives is really not an easy task. So classified ads, online bulletin boards, and newspapers are definitely a no-no. They are not the ideal route to take, because such things are extensively confidential and they are not open to any public sort of advertising. So making mass market advertisements or promotions will only attract people who haven't got any other job prospects. So this will lead to unnecessary pool, which will have undesired or unscrupulous elements more than the deserving ones. So in today's highly competitive, complex economy, we know it's a VUCA world of sorts, the quality of the organization's senior executive team is extremely critical. We've seen examples in the yesteryears where companies like Kingfisher, Jet Airways, Satyam Computers, due to either a lack in the future vision, a lack in strategy, or unscrupulous business practices, have all met an untimely demise. Whereas if you see the likes of Ambani's, like that Mukesh Ambani, if you see the like of Tata's and other people, you will see that there has been an organic progression. So it is the key factor that will determine an organization's success or failure. A more reasoned or reasonable approach is to employ specialized professionals who will help the organization. So these will be the middlemen who will actually bring forward the best executives in the market. So this is what is very important. So it's critical to understand how such professionals could be attracted and employed. What qualities should they offer and under what terms should they be engaged? The answer lies in the concept of a retained executive search consulting. Of course, this rings a bell because we've covered it in the earlier chapters. This is a specialized branch of management consulting that is specifically designed to assist clients with a critical and the challenging task of bringing top executives into the organization. So these are seasoned professionals. They day in, day out carry such searches and they suffice the needs of the organizations for such top talent. So let's have a small background about retained executive search agencies, organizations. So these were developed in the United States of America after World War II. Okay, and now they have grown in such a way that, you know, they have actually been instrumental in providing thousands of organizations across the world with the top executives. So the client thus buys full commitment, focus and resources and can expect regular feedback and consultation through such search. So although it's pretty expensive, but the chances of getting the right fit at this level where scarcity rules the market is the job of the retained executive search agencies. So it is the skill. So of course, it is the skill. It is the judgment. So judgment is the wisdom in the decision and the experience of these consultants and their research teams that qualifies executive search consulting as a profession in its own right. So it's not, you know, that every person or every professional can be, you know, a part of this. It is a very few people who participate in such endeavors, and it is their ability to network, it is their ability to create the right fitment and wisdom that helps them get the right people on board for their clients. It needs the focus of senior professionals who can relate to client management and executive community as their equals. Now, this is something which is very important. Now, when you are contracting, you know, when you are meeting, when you are dealing with executives, don't you think they will always appreciate somebody who approaches them as their equal? Correct? So these are people who have retired maybe at from a very high profile and have started their own agencies or have already traveled the world. They've held positions which are close to such positions and can relate to how the executives think. Hence, it's stated it needs the focus of senior professionals who can relate to client management and the executive community as their equals and who can bring to their work comparative judgment and experience of meeting and assessing thousands of executives. So this is essentially how the retained executive search functions. The confidentiality and the targeted nature of retained executive search also helps to minimize the danger of information leaks during the recruitment process that might endanger the client's strategic plans or indicate management instability. So no company in their right mind would try to send out a message that there is a level or certain instability that has been created at the top level. What would happen if they are publicly listed? Let's say on BSE or NSE, the shares would start falling. Like a recent example is the example of Elon Musk, who is the world's richest man, having supposedly some $187 billion as we speak today. Now his wealth has receded from the earlier $210 or $215 billion. And a prime reason is his foray or his interest into Twitter And the interpretation by investors from Tesla that his interest is declining because of renewed interest in Twitter. So many people, they sold Tesla stocks, thereby Elon Musk's fortunes dwindling or declining by a certain 27 or a 28 whopping billion dollars. Yeah. So if people indicate or sense instability at the top, like what happened in his case, there would be a problem. So management teams tend to conceal or hide any moves of their executives to go to other organizations. Hence, the confidentiality when the opening comes up. I think this example has simplified this above paragraph. So the retainer agreement reinforces the obligation on both the client and the search consultant. So it's a sort of an NDA. Okay, so I believe majority of the experienced students do understand an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, or a retainer agreement, correct? So an NDA or a retainer agreement, it tends to bind the consulting organization with the client, and they cannot publish anywhere outside that this need has been created by the client. They have to keep it a business secret until this particular process has been completed and a new CEO, a new CFO, or whatever C-level suite position has been filled by them. So this has to be managed in a very mature, confidential, diligent, discreet, careful, and a professional approach and a manner. So recruiters need to make, you know, and ensure, understand the existing team. So they have to ensure that the existing team, okay, has to be understood ahead of time. So they can make a decision based, at least in part, on matching the character and the qualities of a candidate to the DNA of the existing team. Now, what do we mean by this? So this is represented well by one word, that is the fitment. So the incumbent, the new managing director, or you know, the CFO, CTO, or any specific person who's going to come in, who's going to walk in, has to have a tight cultural fitment to the existing executive brass. If the executive brass is not comfortable with the individual, then there are chances of either them leaving in droves or this person leaving prematurely. So ideally, just a candidate should be perfect fit for your organization, culture, and values. The same should be true of the team that he or she will be managing. The cost of retaining an executive search firm should thus be weighed against the potential costs of a hiring mistake. Now here, it's not a common hiring. Remember, it's going to be costing you. It's going to be an expensive mistake if the fitment goes wrong, because here we are not hiring just a manager or an individual contributor. It's going to be, you know, somebody who's shouldering the responsibility in the future and will make or break fortunes for the organization. Remember this. So whether you're a small or a large organization, a bad or a misfit appointment to a critical position can have consequences that can take up much time and expenditure to recover from. Supporting the profession of retained executive search consultants is a code of ethics and professional practice. Now, this is of course bound by law, as mentioned in the last slide. So senior management recruitment is too important to be left to chance or instinct. So if an interview would be conducted or a mechanism, it would be highly structured rather than a free-flowing one. So by retaining an executive search consulting firm, the leaders of the organization can satisfy themselves. It's a sort of an insurance policy as well. So I'm ensuring myself that I will get a proper, discreet appointment of a person, and we are making a prudent investment in getting the process right. So here the prudent aspect is very important, because you are investing huge sums of money but they are going towards a proper cause. Now let's look at the concept of executive fit. So we've already spoken about it in the last few discussions. So some situations involving executives mismatched to positions or companies cannot be resolved. So more care should be taken in order to find the right person during the search process. Correct? Now this happened, during the, I would say, growing years of Apple, where Steve Jobs approached, I think the name of the gentleman, he was the CEO of PepsiCo, I think it was Mr. Sullivan, and he convinced John Sullivan to join Apple, and his convincing statement was, would you like to sell sugar water, or would you like to, join a reputed organization such as Apple and make a difference? But what he did not realize was that to the existing culture, Mr. Sullivan was a misfit. And later on, Steve Jobs was thrown out of his own organization, Apple, because of a rift in the thinking. So it's very important to ensure that you don't have such a mismatch. This requires attention by both newly hired executives and the organization as a whole. So either you have to be discreet in the recruitment process, or the newly hired executive needs to be open and flexible to the culture that they would join into. Proper conceptualization and implementation of an integration process can greatly enhance the chances of a smooth and productive relationship between new executive and organization. So probably there might be certain outbounds with the people in question. There may be certain residential programs where cultural fitment can take place, and as mentioned, a seamless integration has to take place. So what's, how could we enforce the right sort of fitment? Now this would ideally happen with a 4-point executive integration plan that we just have mentioned in the past slide. Now this includes recruiting realistically. So you recruit those people who are a close or a near fit to the way your industry functions. Strategically plan entry into the company. So, this should not happen with the other directors being rattled or intimidated. So smoothness in this particular aspect should also be important. Build in a plan for two-way feedback early and often. So what is the feedback of the executive vis-a-vis the organization they're going to join, and the feedback of the people who are already directors and C-suite people, and forge effective alliances. So through outbounds, through residential programs, through deep discussion workshops, this can be facilitated. Now, there was just a mention in the previous slide about these important factors or points. Let's discuss each at length. So the first is recruit realistically. So when recruiting an executive from outside, it is crucial that the organization portrays the company as accurately as possible to reduce any disenhancement upon entry. Now, what is this? So what this means is the executive who's coming in should not be disoriented, should not have any sort of a dissent or disenhancement upon their entry. For example, let's say some top level executive from Tata is going to join Maruti, and Maruti, has not been very explicit, then it can be a disenhancement on the executive's part. But if everything is clear, the job profile is ironed out, the CTC is in accordance with the change, the members are happy, then this is less prone to happen. So while organizations clearly don't want to scare off attractive candidates, such realistic portrayals lay the groundwork for a productive long-term relationship built on trust and openness. Second is, of course, as we had just briefly covered, strategically plan entry into the organization. So once an individual has been selected, smoothing the way for the newcomer's arrival and entry can pay big dividends. So if the person is already oriented to your culture, they already know things, they already know the challenges from the previous step, then this can be a simple process. Another thing is, upon confirmation, you can also have press announcements, internal announcements, articles in the letter which can highlight their background and how it fits with the corporate strategic direction of, you know, the organization that they are entering into. Again, as a part of strategically planning entry, it may be appropriate to alert people that the newcomer will do things somewhat differently that have been done in the past. Like the example of Apple. So when the CEO of PepsiCo would have joined, just imagine, Apple, a free-flowing organization, barely about 8 or 10 years old in the market, focusing on innovation, the penchant or the drive to change the world, and here is a John Sullivan, CEO of PepsiCo, a structured bureaucratic organization having presence in more than 150 countries during the 80s. So just imagine. So just imagine the kind of difference in the thought process of this gentleman, and he would of course bring in with him the cultural inertia, correct? So this has to be explicitly mentioned to the people who are going to work for this new executive, correct? Point out that this is the part of the reason the company selected. So the reason, so when I was studying the biography, or I was watching the movie of Steve Jobs, it was evident that Steve Jobs at that age, when he was in his early 30s or in his late 20s, was not taken seriously by other people, whether it's a developmental group, his other, you know, executives, board executives, and thus he wanted a person to be a CEO of his organization who would come from some large esteemed organization. So again, this, I think, with the help of example, has been understood. Having private discussions with key veterans likely to be affected and making the new executive success one of the job responsibilities of the rest of the group is a key point. So if, like, you know, the managing director, the owner, founder owner, has his cousins as board directors, and they are a part of the legacy group, very elderly, and the new executive has a generation gap. So the new executive is in his late 40s with the senior members in their late 50s or even in their 60s. There's going to be a gap. So how could this gap be bridged is what needs to be covered as a part of the strategically planning of the entry. The third point of the four-point executive integration plan is to build in a plan for two-way feedback early and often. So another set of interesting dynamics typically involve the boss and the new or the new hire relationship. So what is, you know, the observation coming from the boss? What sort of feedback would they have, and vice versa? So the individual's boss does not want to be seen as lacking in confidence in the executive. So this is something very important, and thus often manages in a hands-off fashion. So both of them, okay, so the bosses, the heads of department, would need to liaise properly, execute proper communication amongst themselves and the person who is joining or has joined recently. So this is what we are saying. So again, as a part, I've just mentioned this, but nevertheless, let me read this out. Likewise, the new executive wants to demonstrate competence and seeks little supervision. So both should be, communicating well so as to have proper communication and feedback. The next or the last point here is to forge effective alliances. So alliances are nothing but relationships or strategic relationships which need to be generated or forged. So one of the key tasks for new executives is to establish effective networks of support throughout the organization. So a leader without any followers would be futile to the organization, right? So the person who's joining in should be able to extend their influence and should be able to lead in a seamless fashion. So the first step here is to identify key individuals in the organization who will be crucial to continued success. So who are the pallbearers? Who are the immediate influence, people for this new executive so that they can carry out his message and permeate it across the various departments, levels, or locations of the organization. Thus, building effective cross relationships increases the sphere of influence, as I just spoke. Yeah. So every leader is going to have a sphere of influence, and this can be done in a good manner if they're able to network and reach out to various cross functions. Thank you.